Tonight's reading is Luke chapter 2, verses 41 to 52. Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to custom. And when the feast was ended, as they were returning, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem. His parents did not know it, and supposing him to be in the company, they went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintances. And when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem, seeking him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard them were amazed at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us so? Behold, your father and I have been looking for you anxiously." And he said to them, "How is it that you sought me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" And they did not understand the saying he spoke to them. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. And his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and man. The word of the Lord.
The Sunday after Christmas is for theology. Before Christmas, you don't need it. It isn't necessary. Before Christmas, it's all promise. It's all coming. We're waiting, anticipating the incarnation, the light entering the darkness. There is hope. Hope for the inbreaking of the hope of the world. Peace, love, joy will reign. Justice and love and mercy and hope are entering the world in this unlikely form of a baby. A baby, a tiny, vulnerable baby, for the world to all gather around and coo at and share a Coke. We don't need theology for this great hope. We have so many other things to hang hope on. It doesn't even matter where you really fall on the whole belief religion thing. There's room for everyone in this season. We can hang our hope like on tradition, memories, like remember going to grandma's house or the family going out to cut down the Christmas tree or buying the Christmas tree in the Dairy Queen parking lot, whatever you did. Everyone gathering together, going to Christmas Eve church, then coming home and opening a present or the Christmas pageant, Linus reciting the Christmas story. I mean, even when you were 15 years old and you went full goth on Christmas morning, makeup at all, and you sat in the corner burning a hole in the back of your dad's head with your scowling stare while he handed out presents, that still brings back warm, fuzzy feelings somehow. Those memories can put you right into that hope-filled holiday spirit. Or you can hang it on a pagan branch. You can get into the spirit right, reminding yourself that all cultures have midwinter festivals that celebrate the hope of a coming distant spring, the hope of new life and growth coming into the world, even now while they are surrounded by cold, dark days. Or hang your hope just right on that solstice, the rotation of the earth around the sun. Every day from here forward, there is literally more light in the world. Hang your hope on some kind of, I don't know, Tony Robbins positivity. You know, now's the time to put those good things out into the world. Hope and positivity, you know. You can make the hope you need with your mind and your heart. Put it out there and it'll come. Hang it on just this general cultural spirit of the season. You know, everybody, no matter what, as they move around and do their errands, has a reason to be just a little bit more upbeat in their interactions with their neighbors and their strangers. With all these different influences pushing toward hope, buoying up the possibility of hope and love and mercy breaking into the world and overwhelming the darkness and despair, it is easier to look at the Christmas story coming up and think, you know what? Maybe there's something there. You can almost believe it. Or at least embrace the spirit of it all. You know, and the number one reason to look forward with hope before Christmas is the simple fact that it is a season of anticipation. That it is all the goodness, the light, the love, the mercy, the justice, the world peace are yet to come. Soft now, my friends and countrymen, for we are on the cusp of a miracle. It hasn't happened yet. But this week we're on the downward slope of the other side of that mountain. We're past the cusp of the miracle, tumbling down the other side. We're left with dishes and recycling overflowing, the blue bins, all those Amazon boxes. So many. And we got to go back to work. And whatever charitable motivation that was that overcame us and motivated us to get along with our in-laws despite what they say and who they are and how they live has vanished. Now it seems incomprehensible. And how much flour was sacrificed during this season? How much flour sacrificed even to a growingly gluten intolerant people? What has the loss of that flour wrought? This week, the angels have packed up their instruments, the virgin's given birth, the baby's born and gone, the stable's mucked out, and the manger is only home to the muzzle of a hungry ass or ox. Last week was about anticipating a miracle. This week, maybe we wonder why. Like, why what? Why everything? Does this story make any sense? Is it even our story to tell, or did our ancestors appropriate it and twist it into a narrative for justifying our people's historically unfolding domination? And of course, the biggie, if the light entered in the world last week, what happened? If we're remembering this thing that happened 2,000 years ago, what happened? Where's the light that entered in the world? Where's the peace and the love and the mercy? Shouldn't that just make this whole thing a little bit, I don't know, the hope unnecessary for it? It should be here. No, it is time now for theology. Bring on the theology. The weeks before Christmas is for anticipation, possibility, and hope. The week after Christmas is for theology. My friend and mentor, the Reverend Mark Stenberg, always said at the beginning of his first lecture of the semester, theology is a secondary act. Humanity's experience with God is primary, and theology is a reflection on that primary experience. First, encounter with the divine. Second, the reflection on that encounter. Theology. Theology asks the questions, what was it? What was that encounter? What were these people who wrote about the encounter? What did they mean? What does this all mean? What do we do as a result of this understanding? Theology seeks to reflect on humanity's encounters with God, explore the questions, and maybe propose some answers. This week is for theology, because all that we have anticipated was supposed to happen last week. This week, we start asking the questions. Did it really happen? Does it really mean for us the way we thought it meant? Is this a counter-narrative? If it is, how do we make sense of it, live it out, dig down deeper? Is it a mystery with pursuing? Or what course should we take in its pursuit? Of course, everyone is not thinking these things. There are people for whom these thoughts never occur. And of course, not everyone also was able to muster unadulterated anticipatory hope and holiday cheer before Christmas. People are different. Some folks find hope and joy in the celebration and anticipation. Some folks find hope and pleasure in the reflection on the negative spaces, the pursuit of questions and inferences between the lines. There are even those people, I am told, who, when greeted with the over-the-top, unexamined embrace of contemporary cultural Christmas celebrations, are struck only with despair. And there are those who can much better see the possibility of hope and love and mercy in the confession of brokenness, who can only believe the light when it is coming through the cracks in the darkened room. This is their Sunday. This is for the minimally emotive, introverted, bookish, non-multitaskers this Sunday. This is for the very intrigued and slightly amused with the ramifications of a particular interpretation Sunday. This week is for theology. The baby is gone, the barn is closed, been cleaned out. The rich and mighty, they remain on their thrones, the meek and mild under their feet. So let's get to work. Let's think about this. Let's figure this out. Yeah, and by work, when I say get to work, I mean thinking. Let's start thinking about this, asking some questions, studying closely and vigorously. Well, maybe softly vigorously. Even our text for this week is telling us to put away the decorations. Last week, Jesus was a newborn baby. This week, he's 12 years old. He's 12 years old, and he's in some kind of first century Palestine version of Home Alone. It's such a weird story to include right here. And they give it so much real estate, Luke does. 11 verses. Jesus' baptism, by comparison, is 2 verses. Jesus' birth is 7. Why are we here so quickly? 12, all right away. The Sunday after Christmas, and we missed the Messiah's whole childhood? The Sunday after Christmas, and he is already 12. Clearly, this is important to Luke's theological proposal in this gospel. It could be there to show Jesus' independence, or to emphasize that God is Jesus' father, not Joseph. Mary says to the preteen Jesus when they finally find him in the temple, "Your father and I have been searching for you with great anxiety." And preteen Jesus responds, "Why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be at my father's house?" Poor Joseph, that's got to hurt. Or maybe this is part of Luke's building his thematic case for Jesus as the new high priest come to restore the true temple. I don't know. He is in this temple for 3 days, it says. 3 days, just like the amount of time he's in the tomb. And he's sitting among the teachers. That's what it says, sitting among the teachers asking questions. And they are all astounded. They're astounded. He's sitting and studying with the rabbis for 3 days, asking questions, discussing. Forget the baby Jesus. I like this kind of Messiah. The studying, question-asking kind of Messiah. I can get behind that. He is, I believe, participating in the secondary act of theological inquiry. What is he into, I wonder? What is he asking them about? What is he talking about? I mean, is he like, do they mention me in that at all? Or is he just trying to figure out the whole redemption of Israel generally? It doesn't say. He leaves with his parents, and we don't hear from him again for another 21 years. When I was younger, I was a believer in the instant conversion understanding of redemption and reconciliation and salvation. It was kind of an on-off, black, white, then and now kind of understanding. You're lost. You pray or accept a particular interpretation of this faith. You say the words, and then boom, you're changed. Made brand new, born again, like the newborn baby Jesus. Those true changes, they happen in an instant. But I don't think that way anymore. Like now, because of my experience living in the world, and I guess some kind of theological reflection, I've sort of been brought to the understanding, a sort of transformational growth, or the ongoing practicing understanding of redemption and reconciliation and salvation. It's not something that happened and it's turned on. That redemption and reconciliation is kind of something that's happening. Something that takes some practice and some attention and some notice. Like, when we see this baby Jesus, and baby Jesus came to us next week, and the light came into the world last week, the world didn't change in the instant of that incarnation. But that's not the way the world works. That's not how plants grow. That's not how your hair grows. That's not how your understanding of the world happens. It grows, it unfolds. It's transformed over time in relationships. When God entered the world like the little baby Jesus, that Jesus didn't come out of the womb with a magic wand, waving it around, fixing the world up in an instant. But God did come into the world, which is pretty interesting and has some pretty profound implications. Just the notion that the Creator, God, would enter the world to live with their creation, to become among us and for us, that sparks a lot of questions for me. And I guess, like, I'm more like the 12-year-old Jesus than the baby Jesus. The 12-year-old Jesus who's asking questions in the temple. You know, the ancient rabbis say that whenever anybody studies the Torah, more of God's mercy is released into the world. And for me, there's nothing more hopeful than asking why and what does it mean and how could this be and where does it lead us and pursuing the possibility of a practice in a community compelled by these questions. Merry after Christmas. Thank you.